It's Thursday, August 17th, 2023. You're listening to the Tech Breakfast Podcast, the show that brings you delicious tech news and all the hot takes you can handle. It's episode 292. How we feeling?
Feeling good.
Bueno.
Wait a minute.
Muy bueno.
Was that Tyler?
This is not Tyler.
Oh, yes.
The XR field correspondent, Daniel Platt, speaking for himself in third person.
Thanks for joining us, Daniel. Tyler is absolutely buried in work today, was unable to join the show. So we invited our XR field correspondent. So maybe, just maybe, we'll talk a little XR on the show today. That's exciting. But before we get there, we got to talk about some Today in Tech History. We're going to go with the very first music CD. This is fun because I actually had no idea.
Oh, man.
August 17th.
Music
CD. Yeah, you got to tell me the year. Yep. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. Do you want a hint or no?
No, no hint.
You don't want to, you don't know the artist?
I know
the year,
bro.
Don't tell me the artist.
Okay.
Let's just dive straight into it.
Okay. And then, I want you to tell me the
79.
Okay. What you got, Daniel?
I'm going to say 1990.
Whoa. Okay. See, I would have guessed along your line there, Daniel. I would have probably said early 90s, maybe even 90. 82.
It's got to be 80s at the least.
No. It is. 1982. Russ wins this one.
I knew it was at least in the 80s, and that's why I went with 79. I was like, this could be one of those things where it's earlier than I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know how I knew it was in the 80s?
Well, you said 79. Why did you say 79 if you knew it was?
I'm just saying that I knew like the 80s was like it had to have at least been earlier than the 90s, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like I knew that the 80s was a pause. The Wedding Singer.
Oh.
Because
it was set in the 80s.
The bad guy in that film. Yeah, it's in the 80s. And the bad guy in that film bought a CD player and they asked how you play records on it.
What?
Like, you don't play records on it, you play CDs.
That is a fun fact.
Yeah.
So now that we've guessed it, what was your hint? Who's the band?
ABBA is the band. So it's The Visitors by ABBA.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you want to guess what country it was pressed in?
Oh gosh. Japan.
Not the United States. Okay. Got Japan. What do you think?
I'll say the UK.
Germany.
Germany
did it.
I would have never arrived at that, I don't think.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's move on. Let's get out of there. Okay. Let me ask you the one for yesterday. The first Internet Explorer, August 16th. What year?
Wait, what?
The very first Internet Explorer, like, and I'm saying it with capital I, capital E, Microsoft introduces Internet Explorer. The first edition of, came out yesterday. What year?
I'm going to say that came out in 1994.
No, I'm going to go earlier than that. I'm going to say I'm going to give my same guess, 1990.
Okay, it was 95. Russ wins again.
Oh,
no way.
So this is $95 here, but there was a little lawsuit around all this. Microsoft ended up settling it for only $8 million. So apparently the first edition of Internet Explorer was a modified version of Spyglass Mosaic, which Microsoft had licensed. Yeah. And later when they began including Internet Explorer for free with Windows, Spyglass was like, hey guys, what's going on here? Give us some royalties maybe. And they're like, yeah, here's $8 million. Go away. So, and then Internet Explorer was terrible anyway.
Here they are to this day.
Happening today.
Just bundling all sorts of things for free.
Yeah. Man, light up a Windows PC and it is heavy laden with stuff. Okay. All right, that gets Today in Tech History out of the way. What do you guys see in the news? What's going on? Do we need to start with anything from XR?
The show.
Okay, shut her down.
All right.
I think I've been voted off the island on this show. 0-2 against Russ.
Oh no, it happens to Tyler all the time. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it does.
Boom.
Boom. Okay. There is a bunch of stuff out there, but I will defer. Daniel, is there anything going on in the XR space that we need to?
Well, it's been a while since I've been on. So if you want the quick summary,
Can I ask a question first? Is XR still a thing?
It's still a thing because Apple invented it.
Nice. So it wasn't a flash in it wasn't a flash in the pan like Threads, right? It still exists. No. Sorry, I just had to get that in.
Bro, I sent you a Threads link today, which I know you clicked on because you responded to it.
You were the only one that was on Threads today. Okay, let's reel this back in. We're going to talk virtual reality.
Okay.
Slash AR slash XR. Go thing? Ahead.
Yes. Okay. You know, it's been a thing for few decades now, but I don't think many consumers have thought much about it until really probably like the Quest came out. There's still a lot happening there. I was at the biggest XR show of the year called AWE, and that was in San Jose a few months ago.
And what is that? What is AWE?
Augmented World Expo, I think, is what it stands for.
It's awe-inspiring. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Get it?
Okay. Very clever.
Go ahead.
So clever. Yeah. Okay. maybe I do still have a little bit of spice in me. So I went to that show earlier this year with everyone I talked to. It was a great event. Everyone's super stoked on XR still. According to everyone I talked to, it's the biggest turnout it's ever been. So there's still a lot of interest in the space. I know it's kind of been, you know, AI has been the everyone's focus the last, you know, 6 months or so. But XR is still a thing. There's still a lot of people very interested in it. There's still a lot of companies spending a lot of money on it.
They had 5,000 attendees. Wow.
How many?
5,000. It said over 5,000 attendees, over 400 speakers, over 300 exhibitors, 100,000 square foot expo.
5,000.
Well, it says 5,000 plus. So maybe there was like 100,000 and they're just saying it was somewhere about 5,000.
Yeah. I mean, it was a busy summit or expo. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of great speakers at that. That happened like 2 weeks before Apple finally showed their hand. And that was what everyone was kind of talking about. To beat the Apple announcement, Meta announced the Quest 3, but didn't give too much information about it. I don't have a lot of the stats off the top of my head, but I'll give this approach really quick because I think this kind of gives a good direction as to where each company is kind of focusing on. So Meta's
I see $500 is what I'm seeing for the Quest 3 price.
Yeah.
$499.
Yeah. So
I'll be there.
The way that these companies are approaching it is Meta's kind of taking the price point that people want and building their way up. And Apple is taking the opposite approach. They're taking the product that you want, and then they're going to work their way down on the pricing. So, you know,
that's insightful, Daniel. Look at you.
You know what? Every once in a while, I have a little bit of good stuff to say.
That was gold.
Yeah. So, yeah, $500 for the new Quest 3. I've heard great things about it. I've heard new color pass-through is going to be amazing.
Is that what these three eyeball things are in the front of it? Those are cameras giving you color pass through and all that?
Yeah, there's more sensors on it. It's supposed to be faster. It looks kind of like the Quest 2, so it's not the same form factor as the Quest Pro. I've heard good stuff about it.
So let me back up in general. So going back to the AWE Expo, when you look at XR as a whole, and you think about the players and the exhibitors that are there and all that kind of stuff, who really has, like, trying to think of another example here, but really, I was singing the Hokey Pokey dance with my 6-year-old last night. Like, who's got their right foot in and not taking their right foot back out? And they're like, they're bought into what's happening here. I saw the VP and GM of XR from Qualcomm was there, Hugo Swart. I saw there's a bunch of names of companies here I recognize, but who's bought in, who's invested here outside of obviously like Apple, Facebook, stuff like that, Meta.
Yeah. By the way, what
are you seeing?
Hugo, he's an awesome dude. I know him. Okay. And I work with him every once in a while.
I know him.
So I know him.
I'm seeing things like Lamina One. I don't know what that is. And there's somebody from, there's a lady named Nelly from LVMH. I don't know what that is. Nelly. Is there like that's this whole
Louis Vuitton is LVMH, the big designer brand.
What? Okay. Why are they there? What's going on?
I feel like almost every industry has at least someone that's got their foot in the game. If you want to talk LVMH really quick, they've been exploring a lot into the metaverse, but primarily more along the NFT front. You know, they're trying to look at luxury goods that can be, you know, where you can show off your fashion and.
Yeah. I need the shoes that I wear in real life to also be there on my avatar.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yep.
They should be more expensive, though, for the avatar, in my opinion.
What? Why? Because more people are seeing them? Is it like
I've never Paper bought a view? Knife for like $4,000, and that's what my knife in Counter-Strike is worth. So I'm just saying that, you know, these digital items, that's real value. That's the way I see it. React.
Okay.
Argue. Tell me why I'm wrong. Get ready.
I don't even know where to begin with you on that. Yeah, but there's other things in here like Linden. Or go ahead. Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I see Linden Lab, I see Unity, I see Snap, I see a bunch of companies. I'm not really sure what's going on here. And like when you go there, what's the feel? I mean, is McDonald's showing up or like what? Help me understand what happened at Awe and what the big, like who the big players were. I just learned that Louis Vuitton actually cares about this, which is surprising from high fashion to XR.
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of companies across the world see that XR is on the horizon for. And I don't like using the word horizon because of Meta. I don't like using the word Meta because of Meta.
It's fine. I don't like saying CrossFit.
No, it's so okay. I get it. We like Meta now. Everyone hates Elon.
Yeah.
Meta's fine. Meta's cool again. It's all good.
Is this because Zuck is doing jujitsu, or what? Why do we like Meta again?
Well, because he's cool now that Elon Musk is not cool.
Are you saying that because you look like
that's
him?
That's what's happened.
Or,
I mean, I've always thought that he looked cool.
Okay,
but that's a different thing altogether. I'm just saying that it's okay to like Meta now. It's fine.
Okay,
everything's fine.
If you're a stock owner, you're doing pretty well.
It's don't worry about that. That's not important.
So when does the industry, like if I go as an example, I go to news.google.com and I'm always like, I click first on the technology tab and then they subdivide technology and they've got it like mobile gadgets, internet, virtual reality, or artificial intelligence computing. So from a consumer perception perspective, should it not be virtual reality? Should it be XR? Should it be AR? Does there need to be like a nomenclature update in the industry?
Yeah.
Like where are we going and what's happening there? Yeah.
Yeah. I think virtual reality, quote unquote, is pretty tied to a lot of gaming experiences. So I think that's what a lot of people think of when they hear VR. Apple's headset, I don't think they ever said virtual reality or mixed reality. I don't know if they said augmented reality either when they showed their new headset. All they said was spatial computing, like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. the core concepts there is really mixed reality and augmented reality. So, you know, being able to do pass through and blend your virtual and physical worlds together. I think that's where a lot of the public expects a lot of the adoption to come from. But I don't think a lot of people are huge believers in virtual reality being like the huge major, experience that people put headsets on for.
There's just two distinctly different approaches there, right? Like virtual reality is a place that you go.
Yeah. Yeah. You transport.
Whereas if you think of your phone, which is, the most recent transformational device that we've had in our lifetime, that's something that goes with you everywhere you go. So if Apple wants to try to recreate the same level of success, you're not going to have the same. If it's just a place you go, it's not going to work as well. They need to create it to where it's with you in more places, where it goes with you for these purposes. Both are going to exist. In fact, from a device sales perspective, I'm sure that the goes with you, the augmented reality, whatever you want to call it, mode will probably be the seller of more devices, whereas just the same reason why on, all of these app stores, we have different policies for games. Gaming will be the thing that still drives the most revenue because people like to be entertained. So it's, the terminology, I don't think it matters as much as differentiating from like the intent behind the various ways the X and XR can be used. And that's really where it is. Virtual reality is a place you go. Augmented reality goes with you. Like those are the two distinctions that we're really looking here. And I think both are going to coexist forever.
Agreed.
Well, okay.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. Cause I've kind of been, sharing a similar thought logic with a lot of my like headset partners that I work with. And this thought of being able to bring a headset around with you anywhere, like you do your phone, is everyone's like, oh yeah, that's where we want everything to go. And yet no one has a 5G enabled headset yet. So I've always found that interesting. I don't know if it's just like the cost of throwing a 5G chip in along with the chipset that powers the devices. But I've yet to see anyone do it besides Lenovo's A3 AR glasses, but that's purely because you're plugging the glasses into a phone. And so the phone has a 5G chip in it. But,
right. Yeah. I think what I think would be interesting in this space, and it would have to be done, it almost have to take the Sonos model. You could call it the Apple model, but I don't know if it would play here. You'd have to make it very simple in making these things work together, but I almost feel like a stair-stepped way of getting into this would make sense, like a modular way to develop the type of experience that you could do. Like say you had glasses and then those glasses, you could then say when you get home, you are still wearing those glasses and you've been using them all day, but you're able to put something over the top of them that connects onto them and makes it into a VR experience where you go. So you have like a piece of it that goes with you. Cause the part of this, that's just so difficult to wrap your head around, the taking it with you anywhere you go, is the headsets we have today that's completely unviable, right? Like you just can't, it's not going to work. Like you're not going to be walking around using it outside as an example. Like you have to have these different form factors to service the different use cases. Whoever figures out how to take multiple form factors but provide one fairly seamless experience as you jump between both worlds, I think is going to be hugely powerful if someone figures out how to do something like that.
Not if, it's when.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when? someone will figure it out.
Yeah. So when's that tipping point? Like you look at the law of diffusion of innovation, right? There's a tipping point where you move from the innovators, which is like the first 2.5% of the population, past the early adopters, which is the next 13.5%. And you kind of hit this, what they call a tipping point at 15%, where it just starts to explode and you get the big part of the bell curve for the early majority.
Yep.
When do we hit that? Because right now, clearly we're in the innovators. I would say 2.5%, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure where you're in early adopters.
I would think that that's where we are, is innovator stage.
I hear people that have that don't work in tech that ask me about headsets and which ones they should get their kids at Christmas and things like that. So I think we're close to the end of early adopters.
No.
Really?
I think so.
Okay. Well, let's zoom out and look at it on a global scale, right? Cause a lot of it, I'm just looking at, my neighbors around me. Talk to me about adoption in India. Talk to me about adoption in China. When we talk about two of the largest populations in the world.
Asia is extremely forward with this XR world. I think there's a strong use case for people wanting to escape, these super compact cities where, people are living in tiny apartments and you all of a sudden throw on a headset and you're in this huge open space now. Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of adoption there now. They have a lot of Chinese brands that are pushing headsets out there that we don't have in the US for a slew of different reasons. There's a huge effort there. There's a lot of companies producing headsets in China and India. I'm seeing a lot more adoption in Europe on the XR headsets than I'm seeing here in North America, which I think that's an interesting.
Well, maybe we are past that. I mean, how many people in the US?
350 million. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The
330 something million.
Yeah. For early adopter stage, that cuts off at like 13, 14, 15, something like that percent.
Yeah.
So if we just look at the raw usage of the, because the early adopter stage is hugely critical to what we're talking about here, because they are the influencers for the early majority. Mm-hmm. And that's the next phase of this. Just doing a very quick search here. As of 2023, there are approximately 66 million VR users in the United States.
What?
So if there's 66 million VR users, that's what it says.
Okay, that's 20% of our population.
That's 20%. So that would be in the early majority. This number, correct. And here's the interesting part here, says this number has grown significantly from 22.5 million in 2017 and 50.2 million in 2020. The VR industry market size is currently valued at about $7.72 billion, with 47% of Americans stating they are familiar with VR, and the number of VR users expected to grow between or reaching around 70 to 71 million by 2023.
Wow.
Now that's
farther along than I thought.
That is a much larger number than I expected. It does make me ask questions about the experience level, because there are, who remembers the like Samsung VR where you put your phone inside of
the Gear VR?
Yeah.
Like Gear VR and all that. Like
you put your phone in a box and your eyes are spread against your phone.
Can we not count those? Like, I'd like to not count those.
Yeah.
Is that what the Pico is? Is the Pico that?
No, the
Daniel,
Pico is a standalone. Standalone.
Okay. I had no idea what that was, and that was kind of popping up in the news today. The Pico
Samsung 4. Gear VR, nor would I count the Google Cardboard or any of those type devices.
That's the one I remember.
And that's where surely those have to be counted in this, because if I think of VR headsets used in mass, I mean, Quest is number one, of course. We then have, from a gamer perspective, you've got the things released by Valve with the Index and whatever they did before that with HTC. And you have Oculus, of course, that was releasing stuff for the PC before then, and then Sony has some things out there. But I think how many Quests were sold? Quest 2s.
Well, so I just pulled that up, and I pulled up roadtovr.com, which if you want a good site for following all things XR, it's one of my favorites. This says as of March 1st, 2023, that there's sold nearly 20 million Quest headsets alone. Now, it doesn't specify Quest 1, Quest 2, or Quest Pro, but those all are standalone devices. And that's
just a
healthy number in and of itself.
Pulled up the same thing, 20 million across Quest 1, 2, Pro, and Pro. That adds up to that number. So that's whatever, I can't remember what number we said it was earlier, but you know, that's roughly a third, you know, of what we were talking about earlier is coming straight out of that. So really a comment I was going to make earlier, and I maybe feel more confident about now, let's just pretend that we do take off the fluff. Cause I do think there's some fluff in these numbers for things that we don't really consider
100%.
Anything more than a novelty type of experience that, you know, you use with your phone or whatever. I think that Apple very likely does get this into the early adopters phase if we're not there already. Even if it's not, I mean, look, they can't sell a crazy amount of these $3,500 devices. They're just priced out. Even they don't expect to do that. But we all know the influence Apple has over markets that they enter. Like it's just going to impact that market dramatically regardless. Yeah. So more Quest 3s are probably going to be sold because Apple legitimized the market and people have $500 more often than they have $3,500.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's like, Mom, I want the Vision Pro. And they're like, we have Vision Pro at home. The Vision Pro at home, right? If you're following along with the meme, it's going to be the Quest, the Quest 3.
Don't you already have these shoes?
Yeah. There's one that's... I saw the other day, whatever, I don't want to waste people's listening time, but it was comparing, it was like I want Patrick Mahomes, you know, like, oh, mom says we have Patrick Mahomes at home, and it's Kenny Powers or whatever, like the guy, it sounds just like him. I don't know, anyway.
Kenny Powers is right up there with Pat Mahomes, and as everyone knows, I went to Texas Tech, I like Pat. Kenny Powers is a legend. You never talk down to him.
Oh, I know. It's just funny. You've probably seen the ones where they're comparing their voices and they sound exactly the same. It's pretty funny.
Oh, they're so
good. I also saw, I just happened to turn on my TV yesterday morning and it was on ESPN and they were debating Patrick Mahomes overtaking Tom Brady as the greatest of all time and whether or not he would need to earn more rings than what Brady has in order to take that title. Or that his level of performance and consistency already demands him to be in that conversation.
Here's the thing, I'll give you my opinion. I think it's ridiculous. I don't think it's possible this early in his career to overtake Tom. But if that can of worms gets opened, and then all of a sudden we aren't giving Tom the GOAT title based off of the rings, do you understand the can of worms that's going to open for?
Oh, I know. Right.
I'm serious because everyone always loves to talk about like the rings that he has. And even though he doesn't have the most all time, they seem to think that his are the only ones that matter, which granted there's a lot of reasons why like sports definitely after the 80s, but more prominently after the 90s are like more strongly taken into consideration for like all-time results. But it's a fascinating thing because you talk about Kobe or LeBron, neither of which, by the way, are better than Jordan, but they don't have six. So people just be like, end of conversation. So that's just, I feel like we're going to have another lifetime debate unless, I don't know, how many rings does Tom Brady have? Like 45?
The thing he has seven. Brady has seven. Yeah. But the thing is, though,
it's seven. But dude, there was one point in time in my life where every other year on average, like he'd been to 10 Super Bowls in 20 years.
Yeah. And he was winning. Yeah, exactly. It was
that's nuts. Insane. It was just,
who is Tom Brady playing against this year? But Tom Brady has played 23 seasons. Patrick Mahomes has only played 6 seasons. Like, let's calm down a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
They've been great.
Maybe there needs to be sort of a statute of limitations on like a minimum number of years. Mm-hmm. So whatever the reverse of the statute of limitations are, like, maybe he needs to at least play for a decade. Like, can we get exactly. 3 more years of Patrick Mahomes before we start having that conversation?
Right.
And then what we have to do is we have to compare the first 10 years of Tom to the first 10 years of Pat.
I mean,
and then, you know, so once you get above like 13, 14 years, maybe after that it becomes a wash because the longevity game that LeBron and Tom Brady play is so unique that it's hard to make that a major criteria, but you have to get a good number of years in there. I mean, it's got to be 12, 13, 14.
Agreed. Plus, I feel like he's still basically a rookie. And he's a rookie, by the way, that's already thrown 49 interceptions, to which Tom Brady was like 15 years in before he threw his 49th interception. Okay.
I didn't know he ever threw one, but
we'll leave it at that. Yeah. Well, so he got old.
Hold on. Tech related. Both of those guys have smartphones. So we just bringing that.
He got old.
Into the
Tom room. Got old and he started throwing interceptions, and now he's
are they wolf. Apple or Android users?
So probably Android, that would be my guess.
Oh man, I don't even want to say the other thing. All right, let's bring it back
to bring that back in. Aaron asked a question earlier about, you know, who are all the companies that are involved in XR and why. You mentioned, you know, LVMH and Qualcomm and Unity and all those. So if I could briefly answer that. I know we're like over 30 minutes into this thing at this point.
We got time, baby.
Well, yeah. Qualcomm's got the chips. So, you know, they're going to be in almost every single headset out there besides the Apple one. Although there's technically components of Qualcomm that also will go into the Apple headset. Unity and Unreal power 95%+ of all XR apps today. Don't quote me on that number because I kind of made that up. I don't know.
Is Qualcomm in the Vision Pro, or is Apple doing their own chip for that?
Apple's doing their own chip. Interestingly, one of the interesting approaches they're doing on that one is they're doing one chip purely for the headset. So running the displays and keeping that crisp 90 hertz or whatever hertz that display ends up being. And then they're doing another headset that handles the compute of the applications, which I think is a really smart thing. Whereas a lot of like the Quest headsets today, it's just one chip. And so if you overload that chip, then the entire headset bogs down and you get motion sick because you're getting below a certain frame rate threshold. But
Do you remember when we got dual procs in our desktops and now we're talking about them inside of a headset?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That, you know, these mobile chips, they're coming a long way, and there's still a lot of progress to continue to be made on it. But
I don't think that Qualcomm makes anything in the iPhone outside of the modem. I think that's like the last thing for Apple to make themselves. So if they don't have a modem going into this thing, then
I thought Broadcom did that. Didn't Broadcom just get like a $5 billion deal with Apple?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure like the Qualcomm 5G modems are used in.
Through this collaboration, Broadcom will develop the 5G radio frequency components, including FBAR filters and cutting edge wireless connectivity components.
This says
that was earlier this year,
March 1st.
So that's probably Qualcomm for a future CEO
expecting iteration. Apple to use its own modems by 2024. Okay. So
Is Intel anywhere in this? Like, did they show up to AWE? Is it called AWE? Sorry, AWE.
Everyone calls it AWE, but you can keep calling it AWE, just like Russell keeps saying Oculus.
Intel.
What?
No. So I
he says what? Intel brand. He's like, I don't hear what's wrong with that. Intel anywhere on the radar?
I didn't see them at all at the event. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Qualcomm's probably the biggest chip maker. As far as I know, you know, they're in the Picos, they're in the HTC devices, they're in the Meta devices, they're in Lenovo devices. So almost everyone is using Qualcomm chips. And so they're extremely, you know, they're spending a lot of money on R&D in the space. They want to continue to power every single headset that comes out there outside of the Apple one. You know, there's the engines out there. There were a lot of telcos that had some kind of presence at this event. So, you know, there's all of the big ones here in the US. There was Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile. And, you know, like I said before, none of the headsets have 5G chips in them just yet. But I think a lot of the telco providers see the opportunity for connected XR headsets. And so they are involved in the space today and will just continue to become more and more involved over time. A lot of enterprises are looking at, you know, XR use cases and ways they can start adopting XR, whether that's for meetings or training or, you know, our use cases, you know, hybrid work and enabling remote teams to have that in-office experience, but for remote. So a lot of companies are looking at those tools sets that are out there today. So, you know, you do see a lot of huge companies out there exploring those use cases. I didn't personally see a McDonald's there. Maybe they were there, but I didn't see any strong presence from them.
Yeah. Intel provides Meta with their Wi-Fi chips in the Meta Quest. So okay. They are definitely big into the XR ecosystem.
I just wonder if Intel's okay. I've just watched them slide down the market cap board for the past 15 years.
They
look at all the semiconductor companies.
Really, really have to figure out their manufacturing process. I mean, they just have to.
Tell me why they're so stuck on it for so long. Yeah. Tell me why so they're currently ranked number 8 if you look at market cap for largest semiconductor companies in the world. They're sitting at 136 billion. Nvidia is over a trillion. TSMC's 475 billion, Broadcom 340 billion. Even AMD has eclipsed them. They're at 168 billion, right?
Where's Qualcomm on that one again?
So I didn't list Qualcomm, but they're right behind Intel in terms of market cap. They're at 122 billion. Intel's 136 billion. Yeah, AMD is up the board at 168 billion, which is surprising, right? Because when I was a wee lad in my career, 18 years ago or whatever, and was selling, you know, processors and servers and whatnot, it was like 98% Intel.
My mind. I mean, this podcast, I'm recording from an AMD processor. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm all for them, but that is insane to me.
Yeah. When AMD, I dropped the link, if you're listening,
business like 15 years ago.
Yes, dude. And so, yeah, if you're listening and you're part of the TBP community, I just dropped the link in there in the chat. Go check it out. You can pull it up there. Companies by market cap, etc. If you are not in it, t.me/techbreakfast. It'll prompt you to join Telegram, and you can do it that way. But yes, I mean, I remember those days. Like, there would be an Intel vendor in our building just throwing cash at people, like, sell Intel, and just like dropping $100 bills on your desk. It was nuts. And AMD would come in and they're like, what is the problem? Why are you doing this? Why are you allowing this? And I mean, they were just buying the business. It was crazy. But, and then I go and I sort it by employees. It brings up a whole bunch of, like, Qualcomm is number 5 at 51,000. That's quite a lot of employees. Intel has 131,900 employees. Holy. Can someone help me understand why they have so many? Like, by comparison, AMD is 25,000, Nvidia is 26,000, Broadcom is 20,000, right? Like, they're the size of the other top 5 in the top 5 in market cap across the board. I don't understand.
It's pretty wild. I'm wondering about, let's see, patent numbers, maybe? Patent numbers between AMD and Intel. I mean, it's fast. It's just so fascinating because I'm pretty sure that Intel still owns rights to the x86 license, meaning that everyone else that uses it has to pay them for it.
Sure.
And that alone just seems insane. Okay, so AMD has a total of 11,492 patents. This is actually a big deal in the semiconductor space. Yeah. Intel,
I mean, so this is fab work though, right? There's a lot of, I'm sorry, you're getting to a point there. Sorry.
Intel, on the other hand, has 214,150 comparatively. Like, Intel is attached to so many things that run on people's hardware. Like, there's so much Intel stuff, even in my AMD system.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes me wonder about the AMD market cap in this particular instance is they are the clear, in a way, number two from a discrete GPU perspective. It is not close. And NVIDIA, of course, is by far and ahead number one. But I would think that a significant amount of their market cap presence is based off of the fact, basically, that NVIDIA can't meet the demand. And we have to have another competitor in the space. AMD is it. And Intel, while they've put out discrete GPUs in the last like year or two, they're way, way, way behind. They have a very long way to go. So I've got to imagine that AMD is being propped up pretty heavily by their, you know, relatively good GPU space. Now, I will say I don't have an AMD GPU, and I haven't had an ATI, which was who they acquired for their GPU business probably, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. I haven't had an ATI or an AMD GPU in my system since probably 2010. Yeah. That's probably the last time I did. I mean, NVIDIA's just kind of been on this trajectory, smoking them. So I think that's probably a big part of it. But, I mean, that really blows my mind because...
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're talking about from the market cap perspective and all that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and to kind of answer my own question in terms of employees, you know, we're looking at the rankings off of chipsets, but Intel also, they do their own fab work. They create their own Ethernet, wireless, Bluetooth. They have storage, memory components, all that kind of stuff. All these things that AMD doesn't have by comparison, right?
Right. So, not because anymore.
AMD's fab is done by TSMC, right?
Yeah, they used to. I mean, that TSMC in many respects, like TSMC and AMD kind of made each other in many respects because there was a lot of people that didn't think that you could outsource the fab work. They didn't think that it would work well. They didn't think that the margin percentages would work well for that business, which is interesting because as I look at these fab providers right here, TSMC, their operating margin is at 50.54%, which is second on this list. So that ended up not being true. But in addition, they didn't think that people felt like if you weren't making your own fabs, you weren't physically producing your own chips, that you weren't going to be able to control all of the different aspects you needed to in your line of production to compete well. And that's why Intel had a really, really good advantage for many years. But TSMC independently, right, they ended up really improving the process. They started creating sort of these 3D chip models. So moving vertical instead of horizontal across the board, that was a game changer for them. It allowed them to shrink the chips faster. And Intel didn't do that. And so that was major. And then AMD was built off of that success. I mean, AMD had to come up with the designs, you know, similar to how ARM has to come up with their designs. But AMD had to get very creative. And they still do because they don't have nearly the R&D. You saw the patent difference. But the raw physical technology difference that TSMC was really propelled them. And then AMD and ARM were the ones that, you know, started using TSMC to perform a lot of the manufacturing here. And it just, they all kind of grew together. But if you can't tell in my voice, I am completely blown away by the fact that I just saw that. I never thought I would in my entire life. I really didn't. Yeah, it's just insane to me for me to be looking at this number right now. I mean, good for AMD. And I think it's Lisa Su or Lisa Liu is the CEO. She's just done a phenomenal job with that company.
Taiwan,
long way to go in the GPUs, but she's done a great job.
Taiwan number one, is that what you said?
Taiwan number one. Well, yeah, and you know, her and NVIDIA AMD's CEO, Jensen Huang, are cousins.
Company.
Or
wait, her and who are cousins?
I think Jensen Huang is her uncle or something what? Like that. Jensen Huang and Lisa Su?
From no. NVIDIA?
Yeah.
What? They're cousins?
What? Cousins or he's the uncle. I'm pretty positive that's a thing.
Wow.
I want to start Googling.
We got to figure this out.
I'm Googling. Well, I'm AIing, perplexing. That's what's happening right
First
now.
First cousins once removed. Okay. So close still.
Distant relatives.
Yeah.
First cousins so, once
quote,
removed.
She says, quote, some complex second cousin type of thing is her answer. That's so good. That's funny, Lisa.
That is funny.
Some complex second cousin Lisa. Type of
thing. I mean, I think she probably lives in Austin. That's where they're based. We should get her on the show. Let's see. Yeah, some other interesting names on here that, you know, not necessarily surprising, but like Texas Instruments, TI still holding strong, you know, still doing work at number 7. They're above Intel as well, which is wild.
Well,
in other news,
the
CEOs of McDonald's and Burger King are owned by half siblings.
What?
I said in other news, McDonald's and Burger King are both owned by half siblings. Never mind.
And Wendy's there. Okay.
Yeah.
I do have a somewhat related piece of news on this. If we want to bring that back around.
Never. We never want to close the loop.
Okay.
The loop always needs to stay open.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I digress. Nope. I'm done. No. All right, so I was going through my favorite social media platform, LinkedIn, today and saw all of this news around the 2025 Cadillac Escalade IQ.
Just shaking my head.
me too, dude. I don't think about LinkedIn unless somebody mentions LinkedIn.
There was a little sarcasm there, but I do use LinkedIn a lot. I know. Even though it's not my actual favorite. It's obviously TikTok.
Red, bro.
Get out.
You're about to get kicked off this show.
All right.
New York just banned it for government officials, I think.
That's what I'm talking about.
Everyone should. Okay, 2025 Cadillac Escalade IQ. The reason it's all over tech news today is it's going to be one of the very first cars that's utilizing Snapdragons, which is Qualcomm, their automotive solutions. And so I'm just kind of scanning the article here, and they're using quote-unquote Qualcomm Snapdragon digital chassis, Snapdragon cockpit platform. So it looks like Qualcomm's investing a lot. Oh, and here's another one. Snapdragon digital chassis stack.
Hold on. Are you telling me that this is some like NFT chassis? Because I'm not buying a car with a digital chassis. I need that thing to be solid.
You have to pay virtual gas to go anywhere. Yes.
Actually, I can get behind that.
Virtual gas, is that what we're calling electric vehicles now?
Yeah. Well, because anytime you send crypto, you have to spend gas, right?
Oh, that's right. Sorry. That makes sense.
I mean, I'm telling you, the next consumption model is going to be a subscription to mileage. So you just get the car and you pay mileage on an electric car just like you would for gas. So the people are going to go back to how many miles per gallon of electricity do you get? That's coming. Like, you laugh, but like 7 years from now, mark it down. Someone keep the timestamp. That's happening.
Okay. Anyway,
Escalade IQ.
Investing a lot. Yeah, they're investing a lot into the automotive space, and it looks like they want to be powering a lot of the technical features that a lot of electric cars are going. So that was my other bit of news.
Well, you know, that's all well and good, but no one's buying them. Because at the moment, all of these electric cars, dealers have like 94 days of inventory sitting on their lots right now, whereas like gas cars are like 54 days of inventory sitting on lots, which it just seems to me like these things aren't moving at that fast.
I have some opinions on that. It's because all of the electric cars sitting there in inventory are all the garbage ones that no one wants because they have like less than 100-mile range.
A major part of it, I think, I agree with you, is like the way the range works. I mean, I think charging networks is a big part of it. Of course, that's being opened up a little bit, so that's going to help. But
yeah,
I don't understand these cars that have 50-mile range.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a thing. That,
yeah, I'd like to see the breakout of, you know, what the percentage of these electric cars are that are just sitting there, because, you know, the Nissan Leaf doesn't have great range. The Chevy Volt or Bolt, I never remember which one's actually electric versus hybrid. That doesn't, well, yeah, that doesn't have great range. The BMW funky looking one, that didn't have great range. Whereas, like, you know,
the i8, is that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The i8 and i3.
Three. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, those all don't have very much range versus, you know, like the Teslas that do get what, like 250 to 300 or more. And I think, you know, I think the Escalade IQ is supposed to be like 400 range.
That's what it says on the, yeah, it advertises 400 and, let me see, I was just looking at it, 400 and something, 450 miles. It says Cadillac estimated 450.
Well, I mean, it's,
I don't know what that means.
It's a big car. Like,
they're saying it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big car. They have a lot of room for batteries. So, you know, it'll probably weigh 10 tons, but.
So talk to me about the fact that they're showing it advertised and the price is $175,000.
Yeah, what? Clearly it's a car. It's a car for everyone.
They are. So they look at. So right below the car, they have these three pillars of things they want to talk about. 450 miles of range. The second thing they want to point out to you is pillar to pillar, 55 inch total diagonal screen. And then executive second row. And you click on that to look in the interior. And it's basically like a front captain seat, but you have your own TV in front of you that's on the back of the headrest in front of you.
Yeah.
$175,000.
Oh, it's even got a tray table. Like if you're sitting in a business class.
Yeah.
And then.
Not going to see many of these on the road.
And it's cheap. So that's.
Seriously?
Yeah, it all depends on where you live.
I mean, someone's going to have one probably around me for sure.
Yeah, sure. Well, we see everything here in DFW for sure.
Yeah.
I was making a joke that, you know, when I do my kid drop off at school, I see, you know, Audi S classes and every single Tesla you can think of and Rivians and the Hummer electric truck and it. Everything you can think of, we see here.
My brother got one of those electric Jeeps.
Yeah.
That's the end of my story. I don't know which one he got. But he got
does he like it?
Do you ever see that thing? There was like a
probably to him, it's like a big car.
Really, yeah. Someone left like a really mean like note on an electric Jeep that was like, this spot's only for electric cars. And it was an electric Jeep that was charging. And it was like plugged in, and someone still left this like mean note that's like, you're not allowed to park here because you're not an electric car, but you actually
the 4xe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People say that about my truck all the time, bro. I don't know why. It always says compact electric vehicle. So I park my F-150 there and I just sort of walk away and it's fine.
It's you like those early videos of the Teslas getting pulled over by the cops that say, you can't mount a laptop to your dash. And they're like, we didn't. That's the dash. That's the screen for the dash. I'm sure you've seen those.
Which means I can now mount a laptop to my dash because now they're questioning it the whole time.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, now all these cars have these screens. It's fine.
I've talked to a few of those Wrangler 4xe owners. And you basically have to, like, it has an electric engine in it, but it doesn't charge from the gas engine. You have to plug it in and then it'll use that first and you can get your first 50 miles or whatever. And then it flips over. But there's like a good number of them, I think, that just regularly don't charge it. And so they just drive around using their gas engine, carrying the extra weight of an electric motor. So I don't know. It's interesting.
It is.
All right. We got to wrap this up.
We do. I want to just throw out a few more things just for the memes. One is a fascinating thing. So apparently on Instacart, what happens is you accept an order when you're a shopper for Instacart. You accept an order and then some big red flashing light like pops up and says, do not show or give or leave the receipt anywhere for the person who ordered this. They will receive a digital receipt from Instacart. And one of them didn't do that. So someone discovered that their admittedly very large order. Well, I say that. I mean, I'm sure, especially Beulah, your order is probably bigger than this at grocery store for your size family. But 435 is a $500 order effectively. It's $513 what she paid. And but the actual receipt to the store was $435. So it was $435 that turned into $513. That's before the fees and tips. So like this is that is just for like whatever markup it is that they're putting on the individual grocery items themselves, which I will
Instacart,
say as someone
you
who's
dirty
used
dog.
The thing is all these apps do this. Like if you go, if I just put in an order, say from like Chick-fil-A or something on DoorDash, and I order two grilled chicken sandwiches, which is something that I'll often get whenever I go there. If I go to the store and get it, that's like $18 or something. If I order it on the app, it's like $35. Like it's right. Wild how some differences can be. Of course, there's an element of the value you're getting and paying for convenience and all that. But it's just interesting whenever you're paying for the service itself, of which I'm a subscriber to on some of these apps. So you get, either no fee or half the fee or whatever it is, but you have a fee, delivery cost, and then you have the actual like markup on the items itself. So yeah, it can get pricey, and I think it's been going up over time. But there's also a possibility that Instacart, rumors are that they're looking to maybe IPO this year. So they may be looking to get those numbers up there a little bit going into this IPO. So be interesting to see. Tricky. But nonetheless, that was a shocking thing for someone. ChatGPT, which has died down in some of the discussion a little bit lately, but interesting to see that college professors are going back to paper exams and handwritten essays to fight students using ChatGPT. I didn't know they'd moved away from them, if I'm completely honest.
Dude, I don't know if I told you that. I took a Scantron test a couple weeks ago. The first time I'd done that in 20 years. I was a little nervous about it. Scantron, what am I doing? Scantron,
that'll take you back. Did you go through and check all your answers? Huh? Did you do that?
I did the test twice. Yeah. I finished. So they gave us an hour to do the test. Yeah, I finished the test in like 22 minutes or something like that. And so we have an hour to do it. I just went through and did the test again. So,
yeah,
because I was nervous about the Scantron aspect.
Do the kids know those tricks these days? I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But what was even more interesting is there was some TikTok related stuff here. Apparently, an Iowa school district is using ChatGPT to decide which books they're going to ban.
Did we lose him again?
We lost him again.
All right, we got to shut the show down.
Oh. Anyways, yes, everyone should use ChatGPT to make all their decisions.
Right?
Moral of the story.
Okay, I guess shut us down, Daniel. End it.
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
Russ is That's gone. I can't open and end the show.
That's been another Tech Breakfast podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, please join our Telegram group, t.me/TechBreakfast.
That's right. Who put a question on the teleprompter?
Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen.
That's all for now. It's smooth. You nailed it. Russ, are you back? Can you say bye to the people?
I have no idea. I could hear you all the whole time.
Oh, really? Oh. That was weird. Okay. Well, I actually want to hear your ChatGPT thing real quick, and we'll just I'll just leave it.
Okay. Well, I was saying that an official from this Iowa school that's using ChatGPT to decide which books they're going to ban said it simply is not feasible to read every book for depictions of sex. So they're using ChatGPT to go through all the books to see which ones are.
Do they have access to the books?
Inappropriate.
Are they scanning the books in? Are they just assuming that all books have every page scanned into the public internet?
That's an interesting discussion, because I think if you go and you ask for a summary of a book on ChatGPT, you'll be surprised what you get.
Uh-huh.
So, how did they get that info is the question a lot of publishers right. are asking right now. So,
all right, that does it. Right. Do we need to shut it down again?
We can. I thought Daniel did a great job, though.
All right. Bye, y'all.
Go and Brandon, thanks for joining. Shutdown again. Later,
we just have a, we had a listener jump on the live show here. Thanks for jumping on the last 30 seconds. Appreciate you. See you, Brandon.
See y'all.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Daniel.